Here we are on Friday afternoon, February 3rd, about 1:40 p.m. in the Tukey Conference Room in Merritt Hall. And this is John Watt. And sitting here with me is Dr. Sarah Reichert, the new director of the University of Washington Botanic Garden. And I'm going to ask Sarah some questions this afternoon. I'm going to take some of the answers, and we will write an article for the Arboretum Foundation Bulletin. In the tape I will place in the Miller Library for future archival work. So Sarah, tell me how you got interested in plants and environment and people. What brought you to this point in your life today? How did you get started in this business?
My mother had a PhD in botany from Louisiana State University and was working at Wake Forest University when I was young. And she used to pick me up from school, but she needed to go back to the lab, or the greenhouse. I would go back to the lab and kind of hang out with her while she continued to do her work, or go to the greenhouse with her while she watered her plants. And, you know, you'd think and then my father was also a gardener, spent every Saturday that he wasn't out playing golf out in the garden. And you'd think from all of that I would really want to be then a plant person, but in fact, you never want to do what your parents do. And so I resisted it. But then I got to the university and I thought, well, you know, I know plants, you know, because my mom and my dad. So my first quarter, I thought, I'll take a botany 101 class. It'll be easy. And I took the botany 101 class and realized that there was so much more about plants that I didn't know, and the plants were so cool. And so I declared myself a botany major, majored in botany. Went on after college to manage a nursery and landscaping company. So that's where I really got the horticulture connection, was in doing that. And then after about 5 years, decided to come to graduate school back here at the Center for Urban Horticulture. There was a new faculty member named Clem Hamilton who was doing horticultural taxonomy, and that was something I thought I wanted to do. So I came back here, and then after doing my master's in horticultural taxonomy, realized that I really was more interested in doing something that would really help the environment. And while I was working on my master's, I became very interested in this new idea that there were these introduced plants, often introduced for horticultural purposes, that were impacting wildland areas. And I was just hooked on that. And it's been something that I still find very gratifying. I did, after I finished my PhD in invasion ecology, go off and do a postdoc in Hawaii for a couple of years, and then ended up coming back to CUH as faculty in 97. And that's basically, I've been here, specs here since 97 as faculty.
So what intrigues you about this position? What's the most exciting thing?
You know, there's a lot of things that are exciting. So I've watched all of the directors, including Dr. Watt, and I've learned from all of them, all the way going back to Dr. Tukey, the original founding director, and I've learned from all of them and taken away from that there are tremendous opportunities here at both the Center for Urban Horticulture and the Washington Park Arboretum. I think the part of the job that excites me the most is really providing opportunities for students, undergraduates and graduate students, to really get involved in every aspect of what goes on here, serving on committees, helping with curation. We've got students who are helping us writing interpretation for the Arboretum. Art students doing projects, music students doing project, MBA students helping us with our branding issues. It's just really fun to try and think about how we can bring students in and connect them with these opportunities. And I think the staff really enjoy it too. They seem to, you know, really enjoy those challenges of working with students. And, you know, when you work with students, when you get those bright ones and they really connect with what you're doing and you see that light in their eyes, you know, I think it's immensely satisfying. And I think we're all kind of feeling that energy right now with the students.
When did you actually become the director or what?
Well, it's a little murky. Officially, I became the director July 1st, 2011, but I actually was, in fact, serving as an interim director prior to that. Sandra Lear, the previous director, had a family emergency and had to step down rather suddenly, and I had been talking with Tom Hinckley, the director of the School of Forest Resources, about the possibility of my stepping in when Sandra was supposed to leave on June 30th, 2011. And then when she needed to leave, he basically, over a weekend, when she had her family emergency, like at the end of a week, and on Monday, he called me up and said, okay, you're it now. So it was rather sudden, I had a lot to learn. You would think that since I've been here for so long, I would really be up on things. But in fact, you know, especially in the Arboretum, which is a very complicated place, I had a really steep learning curve. So, and people were very patient with me in helping me learn, including you, learning things. But officially, it was the July 1st was when I became the actual director.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that you have the right qualifications for this job?
Well, as I said, I have observed every director to date, and like I said, learned a lot from them, a lot of the good, as well as sometimes, you know, some of the things that they did where I think they maybe didn't have the result that they had hoped for, and so I'm learning from that experience. I think I am an educator. I think that that's an important thing for the director to be for this, because we are an educational institution, so that connection with students, I think, really needs to be there. I think my research specialties are appropriate for where we are in this point in time as well. There's so much interest in sustainability and conservation and restoration that I think, you know, I connect with that. So, you know, hopefully, I think institutions need to lead leaders with different skill sets at different points, and I'm hoping that history will show that I am the right person with that right skill set at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. So, now you've been here a few months, you've been working on that sharp learning curve. What are some of your ambitions and what are some of your ideas for the future of the you know, we'll say the UWBG, but there are also two parts to it, main parts.
Yeah.
What are your ideas? What are you thinking?
Well, I had spent a lot of time in those early months, really up through the fall, thinking about what I want to do, the initiatives that I really want to see happen. The core thing that I want to see happen when I leave here and somebody takes over for me is I want them to be in a better situation than I think I was in, a better situation where the administration understands what we do and how we do connect with students, and a better situation financially. So thinking about how to get to those points, I came up with four guiding principles that I continue to use to kind of help me figure out my priorities. And the first one is to provide value to students through education, research, and recreation. And I'm trying to involve students in every aspect of UWBG, everything we do. We have the university, UW Farm here is now working with TILTH and the Seattle Youth Garden Works on a cooperative farm unit, so we've given them about an acre of land. We have art installations going in, including music installations on the Music of Trees in the Arboretum later this year, working with those students. We have students from landscape architecture doing designs for us, serving on committees with us. We've got students from museology writing interpretation. It goes on and on and on. We've been really trying to reach out to all branches of the campus, not just the sciences, but the arts and business and everywhere. So that's one of the guiding principles, is just to really make sure that we're providing a great opportunity for students.
Let me ask, it seems like the interest from the university's point of view in the Arboretum in regard to education and student involvement has sort of waned or been diminished, or has, you know, people are saying, you know, well, the university doesn't really do anything over there. You mentioned a few things. Are there some really additional special things that you think we could do, or what could be done to help foster that?
I guess I have two responses to that. One is that we have been involving students in the Arboretum. I mean, obviously at CUH it's obvious what we do. We've got mm-hmm. students that have offices here. We have UW classes here. But in the Arboretum, we have classes too. My plant ID class, which prior to that was Clem's plant ID class, and prior to that was Art Krugerberg's plant ID class, is mostly taught in the Arboretum. And we've long had soils classes coming and teaching about the very diverse soils that we have in the Arboretum. We've had hydrology students coming and learning about our crazy, you know, underground water movement. So we've been doing that all along. Where I think the problem I think we've had is that we were complacent in communicating that to the administration so that they didn't see it. I mean, it's 230 acres and they're not there. The administration isn't there. So they don't really see everything that's happening there. And I think, you know, we're trying to find a better way to communicate that. For one, we now have a special student area on the website. And when students do projects with us, with the faculty or with staff, we're trying to get that up there so that it's very transparent how we're integrating students there. But I also think we could have done a better job in just integrating students. And that's why I'm going all over campus this morning. I met with the art faculty to talk about bringing students in to do art or to help students conceive art, learn about natural systems so that they can create art about it. So we're doing, I think, a better job of really reaching out to the whole campus and getting more students in.
Okay, cool. So now, what's your next idea?
So my next idea, my next guiding principle is to provide greater value to the community at large by enhancing the visitor experience. And in doing that, we've always had education programs. We have our weekend walks. We're stepping it up now and doing weekend walks every weekend. So we're doing more of that. But we're also now working on some public health walking loops. So right now we have two, we have five or six planned, but we have a conifer walk that we're developing that's 1 kilometer, and then we've got right now what we're calling a history walk, which goes by some of the historic benches and then the stone gazebo and things that sort of brings the interpretive messages about history so that you can come to the Arboretum and do a walk, learn about plants or about the history of the Arboretum or other interpretive messages, and get some public health effort in there too. And then we're also, as I said, trying to incorporate art and other things like that. But I also want to really improve the visitor experience in other ways too. So one is the Graham Visitor Center, which is really not the visitor center that I want, and it will never be the visitor center that I want. But what we're trying to do is improve it a little bit, providing more seating for people so that when people come, they can, you know, be able to have them get a cup of coffee or tea or cocoa. They can sit, they can bring a picnic, things like that at the visitor center, making it a little bit more user-friendly. My big dream is to take the footprint of the greenhouse, and which the university, that's the university building, and to build a beautiful structure on it, a sort of conservatory structure. One part of it would be a small cafe where people could get a cup of coffee or a bowl of soup or a salad. And we even have Patrick, our education person, has been working on a little garden in that area, a little food garden with high school students, maybe even produce some of the food, you know, that's served in the cafe in that little garden. And then the other part of the building would be an atrium that the education program could use during the day. And then at night could be income for us because we could rent it out for receptions or, you know, meetings or things like that. I think that would be a great thing to do. And just, you know, again, really trying to provide an experience so that when people come, they get that restorative connection with nature that they're craving when they come into a place like the Arboretum, but that they also leave better informed about the world around them too, because we are an educational institution, and I think providing that educational message is really critical.
Okay, cool.
And then my next guiding principle is to provide greater self-sufficiency through increased revenue. So things like the cafe, which we wouldn't run, it would be something where we would have a lessee of someone who would be running it, but have greater revenue opportunities, increasing the endowments. Again, this goes back to my wanting to leave the people that come after me in a better situation. If we can increase our endowments, then that will be, they'll be more self-sufficient going into the future. We do have 520, you know, mitigation coming up, but that's so far into the future. It may be only 5 years, but 5 years is far enough into the future. I'm not counting on anything. We may get some money for that, but I don't know. We're working to improve our marketing. So we do have a group of MBA students from the Foster School of Business who are working with us right now as part of their project to help us figure out how to communicate about ourselves better, because we are a complicated place. We have 2 locations. We have numerous names, CUH, Union Bay Natural Area, Washington Park Arboretum, University of Washington Botanic Gardens. It's confusing, and so they're trying to help us figure out how to market ourselves better. I think if we do that, it's going to help us increase those revenues and things, because people will understand better what we are. And then the last guiding principle is to incorporate innovation into things that we do. So we are the University of Washington, and the University of Washington is about innovation. And so right now I think we're just trying to kind of get up to where some of our, to the level of innovation that I think some of our sister institutions are up to, some other botanic gardens. But we want to improve our mapping, and I have a grant out now to the Institute for Museum and Library Services, that if we get it, would allow us to improve the mapping greatly within the Arboretum. And my goal would be to have the collections database integrated with that map, so that if you were interested in, say, hemlocks or magnolias, you know, we have those sometimes in discrete areas, but we have a magnolia collection in one display area, but we have magnolias in other ways. So you could go in and have a custom-made map through your website on your computer, develop this custom-made map, and then you could go to the Arboretum and find those magnolias. So hopefully we'll get that that as well. And just trying to, you know, come up with new ways to inspire people is really, I think, important. And so
have you gone the next step, which I've, you know, it's coming so rapidly, the use of the smartphones and everything that each person has. And for years, you know, we talked about, you know, tours with little boxes around the Arboretum and check out the recorders and things, but obviously that is no longer, you know, sort of state of the art. But it's now going so quickly. Have you had any thoughts on
So we did, you know, even just a few years ago.
Quickly, it's just
it is. I mean, and by the time we get this mapping done, the quick response codes are probably going to be yesterday's thing.
Yeah.
We did some MP3 player tours, both at the Arboretum as well as here at CUH. Nobody checks them out. I mean, already that technology is like, eh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the QR codes are something we'd love to do, and I think we are planning on doing that with some of our new interpretation that's going in. The problem with that is it's very simple to do the QR codes, but you have to, those QR codes have to send to people somewhere, so then you have to build the website and the material that goes behind it. But definitely, that's what, something we'd like to do, and it's something I think we could do with this new mapping system. I guess we would love to do it. The feeling is kind of, well, let's get to the point where we're ready to do it and then see where the technology is then, because it may not be
so
QR
quickly.
Codes. I know, it does.
I was curious about, you were talking about the need for increased revenues and funding, in particularly in the Arboretum, which is also a city-owned facility. And the city also is struggling and will continue to struggle, like all of us, with decreasing budgets and need to find revenues. And the Arboretum has always been caught in this dilemma where, you know, by public decree, we were never able to charge admission, or aren't currently able to charge admission or things, and so it's been a rather limited resource. But, you know, are there any thoughts? Because I know the city is struggling with not in, only in the Arboretum, but its other facilities, park facilities, of how they're going to sustain them. Any thoughts on this?
Well, you know, we have thought about it and struggled with it. Most gardens do derive a significant portion, often about 30%, of their income from gate fees. And having a fence also allows you to have a membership in which a membership benefit is free admission. And so it's been very successful, just the gate fees and then the membership, driving people towards membership. In an ideal world, we would have that. You know, it is, people do think of it as a city park, and I think the city in the past has been reluctant to entertain the idea of doing this. I think, you know, as time goes on and they become more cash-strapped, there's more openness to discussing it, but there's still a reluctance because there's going to be a tremendous amount of concern among the community if we do that. And I think, you know, if we do that, we need to educate people on how desperate our situation is, that we really are cutting off core functions, that we're maintaining, you know, 230 acres at the Arboretum of a botanic garden with basically five permanent staff and a few hourlies in the summertime. I mean, it's crazy to be doing that. And yet I have to say, I think the staff does a fabulous job. We do already have a fence on, of course, the east side where Broadmoor is, separating us from Broadmoor. So it would only have to be on the west side. But then you've got like Washington Boulevard, which is a historic, you know, road. The fence would have to be far enough back from that and have to be designed to be something that would be consistent with the Olmsted view of things, I mean, which would make it an expensive fence. You'd then need to think about, okay, we've got the visitor center could be one entry point, but you'd need a southern entry point, so that would have to be staffed, and you would have to, you know, have power to it. You start kind of getting into it, and the complexity of it are greater than, you know, than just like, hey, we'll put up a fence and charge admission kind of thing. I mean, the reality is it would be a very complicated thing to do politically, and then just the infrastructure of it. The other idea would be to only fence part of it. So to leave historic Azalea Way, you know, the way it is, and
you
have
might
other
be
areas.
Able to do that with the on the south end, for example, particularly as they move through the new Pacific Connections Gardens and continue to push that, make that a really, really exciting area that people would maybe be willing to pay a fee that could help offset some of the other
maintenance. And that's something I've kind of toyed with, I think, but we haven't really seriously discussed doing that. But, I mean, it would be an idea. Now, if we did that, we'd have to step up the game.
It
would have to be perfect because people have a right to expect if they're going to be paying any $5 to $15, you know, they want to come into a pretty groovy place.
Yeah.
And so we'd have to provide that for them.
Right. I wanted to ask you about, now, it is a... Particularly over in the Arboretum, there is it's a complicated affair. And first of all, the two owners are the University of Washington and the City of Seattle. And the Arboretum Foundation, the support group, which came into existence almost from the very beginning to help support the Arboretum, is a vital, strong, and increasingly strong fundraiser because the public sector seems to be where the money's going to come from. How do you see your role in working with these entities?
Well, you know, it is a long-standing partnership, as you mentioned. So, you know, it's been, 77 years that the city and the university have been partners, and almost that, as you mentioned, for the foundation. So fortunately, I have all the hard work of the people that came before me to work on this relationship there. And so, you know, I think the university and the Arboretum, the university owns the plants, we're developing the collection, and we have the education program. So, you know, I work with our partners, and we each do our respective role. Our role is to maintain, to develop a collection of plants that is, to the university as an academic institution, scientifically meaningful, so often wild-collected material that can then be used for research and other studies. You know, I think it's you know, to provide educational opportunities for people, so to help interpret that collection to the public through walks, through interpretive loops like we're working on, various ways of helping people to understand the Arboretum better, to provide access to the collection through this improved mapping system so that people can really learn more and get in more depth for it. You know, you work with the partners. I go to an awful lot of meetings, as you know, with the partners, and we talk through things there from our own perspectives and viewpoints. But, you know, I think I've heard feedback from the city, at least, that they really enjoy this push to bring more students in, that they feel the same energy that our staff do, that students are exciting, they're coming up with cutting-edge things that us old fogies don't know about. And, you know, they are enjoying it, too. So I look at my role as sort of being one of the partners, but because the collection and the educational programs around the collection are such an important part of the Arboretum, that it's a leadership role within the partnership.
Okay. Any other comments you'd like to make? About the future? One question I might want to ask is, the importance of activities that tie together at both sides of the water that sometimes are difficult to see on both sides of the water, because you see what happens on site at CUH, and then you see what happens in the Arboretum. And sometimes it's not easy to see or to talk about some of these things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think over time, the cultures around the Center for Urban Horticulture and the Washington Park Arboretum were different. So, you know, I think over here it was stronger in the education, and we had a certain staff that stayed here and never went anywhere else. And then over at the Arboretum, less visible student interaction and staff that stayed over there. One thing that, and I'm not going to argue that this is the budget cuts were a good thing, but one thing about the budget cuts is that it means that people have to go to both sides of the water now. And so, you know, we find that the horticulture staff go to both sides, and you know, usually there's horticulture staff dedicated to the arboretum and dedicated to CUH, but they have work days where they come together to increase the manpower a little bit and get more significant work done. I think it's true with the education program too, that there's a little bit more, you know, kind of going back and forth. We're trying to hold more adult education classes, which traditionally have been held a lot over here, do more of them over at the Graham Visitor Center, you know, just to get people over there more. So I think, you know, there's been those kinds of activities, but I'm not sure what other kinds of activities you were meaning with that.
As you're talking about this, it's kind of dawned on me that I think the interaction and the feeling of the staff, the people that work here, maybe the volunteers, a lot of them that are around here, seem to have moved to a point of where they don't, there's not such a definitive divide any longer. They see it as a growing whole entity. I'm not sure that's seen as much in the public.
No, it probably isn't.
If it's a good thing, how do we get that across?
Well, I think it's a good thing. I think there's two things. One is the budget cuts have meant that we've just had to manage more efficiently, and so that means people are going back and forth more. I think also when David Maberly was here, we adopted the name of University of Washington Botanic Gardens, which didn't change anything in reality because, you know, the Center for Urban Horticulture was born out of the Washington Park Arboretum and the need to increase programs and things but without having the facilities to increase them over the Arboretum. So it's always been co-managed, and you know that better than anybody since you've been here almost from the very beginning. But I think even staff had a hard time understanding that. I would have, even my staff working for me in the conservation program would say things to me in the past where I'd think, wait, don't you understand that the Arboretum is us? You know, we are the Arboretum. The Arboretum is the Center for Urban Horticulture, too. We're all one. So I think that's been really helpful at the staff understanding that. Now, the public, I think the public is confused by that, and that's one of the things that I'm hoping these Foster School of Business students are going to help me figure out is how do we communicate this. It's kind of like corporations where you've got, you know, General Mills owns Kraft. I don't know if they actually do or not, but they own, you know, different brands, and at some point they refer to themselves as General Mills, and at other point they refer to themselves as Kraft. And when do we refer to ourselves as UWBG, and when do we refer to ourselves as CUH or WPA? And I don't really understand the way to think about that, and I'm hoping they can bring some clarity, because I think if we can create a better system of how we message this, that people will begin to have a greater understanding that we are one place. I mean, I think the map that we have now, which we usually have in here, but yeah. I think it's in my office now, but that shows that, you know, if it weren't for Union Bay, if Union Bay were land, everyone would get, oh yeah, we're one place, because it's continuous. We've just got this pesky lake in between us, you know, that's blocking us, and you know, so you can't walk easily from one site to the other like you could have if it were land. But trying, I think that map also helps communicate that we are one place. But it hasn't been done well in the past because we're a bunch of, you know, science wonks. And, you know, thinking about the social science end of things of how do people think is has been something we haven't really done very effectively because we don't know how.
And in reality, some of the budget squeezing, I guess I would say, may in the long run help foster some of this because everybody has to you know, kind of think about how they're going to become more efficient, or are there efficiencies in working things together and making it more working more time closer.
So. Yeah, I think, you know, that's been true. I think it's been true with the city too, that, you know, I think the university and the city are working more closely together.
They certainly are than when you look at it. You know, it's hard to see sometimes year by year, but certainly from when you look 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, it's vastly different.
Yeah, they have joint meetings now with the horticulture, their horticulture
it's
just, staff.
It's a matter of how you do business.
Yeah.
And before it was like, okay, do we do this or that? And is this, you know, it was very pointed. Now it just happens.
Yeah.
So.
No, it really helps, I think. You know, we've been managing things together much more efficiently.
Any other words of advice that you'd like to send to the public?
I'm really excited about our future. You know, I think that we have a great future. The present has some grim realities to it, and it's, you know, not easy. It's a terrible time in everyone's history right now, And ours is no different.
It's a very interesting time economically.
Yeah.
And although it's interesting, you know, I heard the job report this morning.
I heard that, 8.3%.
Jobs are up and the economy has changed. And so it's sort of interesting, you know, like what's happening, what's changing, and what is this going to mean for everyone, you know, and how is this going to be put back together, and how is it going to work? It's probably never going to go back to those days where you had money coming in a lot of these sources that were there, but there certainly has to be opportunities other areas.
Well, you know, so about a year ago, I picked up the historic document that we had done, you know, the historic review of the Arboretum, and was just, it was sitting on my desk, and I was actually going to put it away, and I started thumbing through it before I did that, and there was this one page that said that it was another economic downturn, and that the state had not anticipated that the state would be able to bring in enough money from the university side of things to fully fund the Arboretum, and that the city also was having financial trouble and was not able to bring in enough money to really run this wonderful Arboretum, and that the nonprofit, the Arboretum Foundation, did not have the capacity to raise enough money to fill the gap, which is pretty much the situation that we have now. And you look at the date on that report that quote came from, and it was 1938.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been in a position for all of these years where the funding model that we have does not work, and yet we have ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, for me, that was like the light bulb over the head moment where I just thought, okay, we have to get away from this model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, the idea of really trying to increase revenues and increase endowments into the future,
mm-hmm.
so that we're not relying on the state revenues, that the foundation, you know, we will always want them and need them as our partner, but that we aren't relying on a third party. We need to be able to rely on ourselves to do this, you know, to bring in the bulk of the money. So that's, you know, again, that's one of my big goals before, when I leave this position, is to leave things in a more secure place. And, you know, I've looked at the different sources of where we can get that kind of long-term money, and basically building the revenues and building the endowments are the only things that really help. Grants you can get, but they're usually project-based, and they can get you things like the grant to do the mapping will get us to a point where we can be more efficient and allow us to save some money, but it's really not going to provide money for us, and that's what we need. We need money for staff.
Mm-hmm.
We need money for operations. We need money for plants, you know, the infrastructure.
Well, any other comments?
I think that's
probably
enough.
Probably got plenty of stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn this off, and hopefully we have something on here because it keeps turning over. So
yeah, at least it worked this time.